This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
So I've always kind of felt that my friend's apartment in Brooklyn was home, even though I sleep on the couch there.
Home is where I make home.
Like on a shelf where you could go and take something and come back.
I've also been asked, would you go back to Puerto Rico to live?
And I'd always dreamed of going back there, because that's always what I have thought of as home. But...
So I thought, I must never allow this to happen again.
For me, it's a feeling that comes from the bottom of my feet up. The home is the land.
I'll keep moving. And I do.
Keep moving. Never neglect the basics. This is, after all, a show about journeys. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller from our studio in Sebastopol, California.
Lovely, spacious, air-conditioned studio. View of the mountains.
That's a lie. That's a total lie.
Well, yes, I agree. Yes, it is. But there's precedent for that, you know. I think our leaders are onto something. You say it enough times, and it takes on a kind of provisional reality. It's true as long as it's operative. We create our own reality. Nations and marriages are founded on this principle.
Well, it's not doing a whole lot for the studio right now. It's just plain hot and stuffy.
So, which doesn't have anything at all to do with our story today. In these hot, stuffy weeks, we're going back to listen to some earlier features.
One question that usually gets interesting answers from couples is, how did you meet? We happened to ask that question to a couple of friends and got a much longer answer than we'd expected.
We met Julie and Bill about 8 years ago at their wedding. Their priest was a friend of ours, and we were meeting her before the service to have coffee and catch up news. We were introduced and said hello, and it wasn't until much later that we found out about the journey that brought them together.
I graduated from high school in 1960. In the 60s, women had a choice of what they wanted to do with their lives. At least in my family, you could be a nurse or you could be a school teacher. And so I was going to be an elementary education major, and I was going to save all, you know, kids. And my first day on campus, I found a class that I wanted to take, only you couldn't take it unless you were a music major. And I said, okay, I'll be a music major. So for very happily, for 2 months, I was a music major and met all these strange, weird people over in the music school. And then I went home for Thanksgiving and told my mother what I had done. And my mother looked at me and said, what are you going to do? Be a lady band director? And there was so much sarcasm and cynicism and untrusting of me and the whole schmear. So I said, oh, I don't know. I guess not. And then I just kept taking music classes, but I wasn't a music major anymore.
So the first fall, I went to a little school in Pennsylvania, Dickinson College, and I had a lot to learn, an awful lot to learn. I enjoyed being away from home, but every time I came back, you almost get caught back up into that family cocoon.
Well, he said when he went to college, he had a lot to learn, and basically where he learned it was out of the airport and not in the classrooms, and he was cutting a lot of classes and going out and learning how to fly.
I had two afternoon classes, and the best time to fly was also in the afternoon. Now, you take an 18-year-old boy, and here he wants to fly and has always wanted to fly, and he's got German and calculus in the afternoon. Which is he going to do? Flying one. So it ended up that they sent home a mid-semester report in which I was close to failing both those courses. And of course, Dad called and said what was wrong. And of course, I couldn't tell him I was learning how to fly. So I said I was just having trouble.
Talking to Bill and Julie, you get the feeling of two young people looking without quite knowing it for something special. And they found each other.
The first time?
61.
Somewhere my freshman year in college, I was in the band, and I had broken up with whoever it was I was going with at the time, and I looked around, you know, it's a good source of men in the band, so I looked around the band, and there was this cute guy in the trumpet section. So I asked the woman next to me, who was a sophomore, I said, "Who's that guy back there?"
Moi?
Yes.
Well, I had noticed her. And because the flute section is a section that's just rife with attractive women. So the first place you check when you go to have a new crop of incoming freshmen is the first thing that you check is the flute section. And this, well, she was pretty attractive.
So the next band rehearsal, she reported back that he wasn't going with anybody. And I said, "Well, can you get word to him that I think he's cute?" And she said, "Sure, she could do that."
So we started going out in March of 61. And that was it.
We were madly in love. It was fun. We dated through the end of freshman year, all the way through sophomore year, into junior year. We'd gotten pinned, and the Christmas of our junior year, we got engaged. And somewhere along in the following summer, I guess I was feeling trapped or something. So we came back to school and broke up, which sounds very clean and very simple. It was not. It was very messy, and it was horrible amounts of tears.
It was an extremely big surprise, and it was grim. It was really grim. We always seemed to have a link that was something more than just, it seemed to be a psychic link in a way. It can be frightening because you're always sensitive to someone that at times you may not want to be real sensitive to.
So we had a horrible senior year, and I would get so lonesome sometimes I'd go hang outside the Music Annex building where he was practicing and just sort of look forlorn, just because I missed him so much. And so we spent a little time together, so it wasn't so horribly grim. But graduation came and commencement, and we kissed goodbye one last time under the end of the arch in June of 1964 and went on our ways. That was it.
And that was it. Except that 38 years later, they're sitting in our living room together, laughing.
As we did actually see each other.
Yes,
again.
We did. Yeah, kind of.
Julie got married to somebody else, got divorced, became a school teacher, hated it, moved to California, worked, met people, joined a loose-knit, fun-loving Wiccan church, which is a pretty normal part of Northern California.
Just did a lot of stuff, learned a lot of stuff, and never got married again.
Bill got a job as a band director in a tiny town in Michigan. Loved it, got married, had a son, divorced, remarried, divorced, decided being married wasn't worth it, and he'd always been flying, so he went east, got a job as a pilot with U.S. Airways.
To make a long story short, in all that intervening years, I always felt close to her. There was times when there was one night I can remember in particular, and I knew what kind of car she'd had, because before we made our last communication, she told me what kind of car she had bought. So I went through driving through town trying to see if she might have come to town for some reason. I mean, that's how strong that feel was. Then I said to myself, "Bill, you're out of your mind. This is ridiculous." So I went home. So then I might as well, I'm talking, I'll tell what happened. I had been working, flying for the commuter part of US Air, and I got home late one night, and I had a waking dream. This was in September. It would have been September of
93.
And it was a dream. It was as real as you and I sitting here. I had, to my memory, I had never, ever had a dream like this. And we were sitting in this room like a train station. and she was talking very earnestly to me. But her voice sounded like a tape recorder running backward, so I couldn't understand what she was saying. And I would lean forward, and I was, what are you trying to say? What are you trying to say? And she would be very earnestly trying to tell me something, but I couldn't understand. So when I woke up, I was very upset, because here is this woman I've been thinking about for 29 years, trying to get a hold of me.
Bill decided to contact her. But the college had lost touch with her. He remembered her brother had gone to a Big Ten school. He started calling alumni societies, and he got her brother's address. He looked at it, thought, oh, this is ridiculous. Tossed it in a stack on his desk.
Well, that year was the year I decided that I was going to do a ritual for a year to find my partner. And if I could find my partner in a year, then all well and good. But if I couldn't, then that was the sign that I was going to be single the rest of my life. And that was okay. It was like in the book Franny and Zooey, the prayer without ceasing. I was praying all the time I was awake, and probably most of the time I was asleep. If the wind came up, I would ask the wind to help me find my partner, because wind travels all over the world. If I was beside a river, I asked the river to carry the message to my partner that I was looking for him. And so he's having a dream of us sitting in a waiting room. I think that's hysterical, the waiting room. Yes, we've been waiting for a number of years here. But I still didn't know who it was that I was waiting for. And so I just kept putting it out. Everything, just prayer without ceasing. Until?
I had gotten home about midnight, maybe 1 o'clock. I just collapsed into bed. And this is where fact and fiction, or fact and thought, sometimes are interchangeable. But it was like I got out of the bed and the sun had already begun to rise and had begun to come down through the windows. So I started coming up the stairs, and this was real. I have to say, this was real. And I look up the stairs, and there's this figure at the top of the stairs. And I looked up there, and I wonder who the heck is in the house. So I started up the stairs, and I got maybe 3 steps away, and I looked up, and here was her. And she didn't look like I remembered her. She had the beginnings of crow's feet around her eyes, and she was just as pretty as I remembered, but she was older. She was as old as she would have been. And I looked at her, and I can remember I looked at her, and she was smiling. She had this wonderful smile on her face. And I asked her this, how long have you been here? And she looks with that smile, and she says, a very long time. At that instant, I woke up.
Bill notes, by the way, that the airlines require very strict drug testing.
Oh, yeah. Random drug testing and regular drug testing. There was absolutely no, I hadn't even had a half a beer in 4 days, because you can't drink when you're flying.
He found the address again. He wondered, what do I do if she's dead? What if she's happily married? Finally, he wrote a note to her brother.
So I had a message shortly after this. And it was from my brother saying, Bill Middleton is looking for you. Do you want to be found? And I swear to you, my heart went, woo! It just leaped out of my chest. And I thought, oh, yes, indeed. Yes, yes, I do want to be found. Yes, this is the time is correct, and I do want to be found.
They started writing. They wrote all summer. Julie in a remote cabin where the solar power would only allow her computer to run an hour a day. And finally, she said, come visit.
It was one of those mileposts in your life. You know that after the next 20 minutes, you know, your life is going to change. And it's going to change significantly. This is a biggie. And we both knew it. He knew it sitting on the plane. I knew it standing there hopping up and down at the gate. And he got off the plane and he came loping across the tarmac. And I fell in love with him again. And we had talked about how we were going to greet each other at the airport. You know, are we going to shake hands? You know, what is exactly going to happen? We decided probably we would do a slight hug, and then that would be it, you know. But we kind of grabbed each other by the elbows on both sides, and then we were hugging, and then we were kissing. So we were hugging and we were kissing, and one of the first things I said to him was, "You smell the same. I swear to you, I remembered how he smelled." I told his sister once that I sometimes think I married him because of the way he smells. So it took us half an hour of hugging and kissing and talking and more hugging and more kissing to get away from the gate. We finally got out to the car park, and it took us another half hour to get out of there because we couldn't let go of each other. We were just, you know, just wrapped around each other.
It was just immediate.
We just more or less walked
right into
almost straight into each other's arms.
And again, I agree with her. I knew that when I got on that airplane that my life would never be the same.
So I drove him up to the cabin in the woods, and we spent the next 5 days catching up and doing therapy, literally doing therapy. All of this wonderfulness that we had in college, I had repressed. I had put into a deep, dark canyon that I used to have dreams about. It was a recurring dream about this canyon. And that's where I had buried all of it. The second night he was there, I said, "Will you marry me?" And he said, "Oh, of course." And that was the end of that. So then after 5 days, he went back to Philadelphia, and I was staying up there. And we spent the whole next year flying back and forth between California and Philadelphia. And then in the spring, this was August 20th of 1994, 30 years after we had graduated from college and split up. 30 years we had been apart and on our different journeys. And now we're on our journey together.
Of course, you can never be certain of the whole truth about a couple, except for the radiance. I ask them, how have you acclimatized?
That's a curious question. I look at that question as almost as if we had progressed in a parallel journey. There were many things that I had to learn. There were many things that I had to do. There was many parts of the journey, the life journey, that needed to be accomplished before we could have been together in a way that would have been mutually warm, loving, and supportive.
We both feel like this is a nice-sized miracle that's happened here. We talk a lot about if we had not broken up, if we had gotten married 30 years ago, what would have happened? Would we be at the same point? Would we still be married? Who knows? I am not still married to my first husband. He's not married to his first wife. So chances are probably that we were too young, we were too, both of us, too unsure of ourselves, that we really needed these 30 years. It would have been nice if it had only been 20 years, but well, we really needed these years apart to go out into the world and gather the fruits of the journey to ourselves so that now we are who we are, where we are, starting on this part of the journey together.
I also frequently would have a feeling of driving somewhere. And I would be driving to somewhere, a town or something, but I wouldn't have a map. And frequently I would make a turn, go down this road, and something would tell me, you're not on the right road. So then you turn around and go back to where you were, and you continue on the main road. And then you try this road, and finally a road would feel right, and that'd be where you're supposed to go.
In Sebastopol, we were talking with Julie and Bill Middleton. Julie's launched her own publishing company. You can find her at www.emeraldearth.net.
And the first thing she did was a wonderful song collection called Songs for Earthlings.
Songs for Earthlings. Stories for Earthlings. Idiot's Guide to Earthlings. What is it about these earthlings? We seem to be a lot more interesting to ourselves than we are to other species. I mean, the raccoon out back, you know, focuses very strongly on eating the cat food, and I'm sitting there watching, and he couldn't care less. And I'm actually a very interesting person.
Or even if we're not interesting at any given moment, at least we remember being interesting.
All the stories told here are remembered stories. Most of a relationship is remembered stories. Most of a culture. The oddity of present-day pop culture to me, political life as well, is that memory seems to extend back maybe 2 weeks, except for these huge blockbuster icons like Pearl Harbor or the World Trade Towers or Elvis.
So, this is a meditation on remembering. We put a bunch of friends around mics and ask them, what do you remember? What do you want people to remember?
I dreamed I had a very good job on the astral plane.
Well, I dreamed coming right off the cliff. I mean, I was walking, just on air.
I dreamed of large marshmallows just bouncing from marshmallow to marshmallow.
I dreamt about being with my dog and my dog turning into this person, and it looked a lot like my dog, but suddenly I didn't trust him anymore. Maybe it's because I was attracted to him.
I dreamed I was at work and the day wouldn't end, but I learned that I could walk through the walls and nobody realized it but me.
I dreamed I was sitting on a toilet in the middle of a field.
I dreamed that I knew what was going to happen and it didn't.
I dreamed that all the bad things that happened were just dreams.
Remember your first day at school. And you didn't want to let go of your mother's hand.
I remember standing on the top rail of the fence.
Remember when you learned to ride your bike for the first time all by yourself without the training wheel?
Remember losing your virginity?
Remember crossing the street by yourself for the first time.
Remember the hail coming down.
Remember feeling weak and keeping going.
Remember the first time you got birth control, that little round box that made it safe.
Remember the first time you saw a naked person?
Remember when Dad left? And Mom was so bummed out, you never thought she'd smile again.
Remember the first time you had a pet die?
Remember the first funeral you attended?
Remember the first time you almost died and you laughed?
Remember that thing that never happened?
And the first time you touched skin that wasn't the same color as yours? And when you dreamed that you peed and woke up and found you had? And when your knee was bloody and full of gravel, and the first time you saw the skin grow back.
Remember swimming where you can't see the bottom, and camping out in the backyard in your tent the first time, and wondering what those noises were outside your tent in the dark.
And being at the Greyhound bus station in San Diego after 6 weeks in Mexico and being totally broke and having a woman come up to you and say, God told me to come here and give $20 to someone today, and it's you.
And the first time you actually sat behind the wheel in a car and felt it move out into traffic with your hands on the wheel.
Remember snow clumped on your sweater.
Remember singing at the top of your lungs.
Remember the sun on your body feels better than all words.
Remember that first kiss.
Remember getting the giggles and water flying out your nose.
Remember the first time. Remember how it felt.
Remember how it smelled.
Remember where you left your keys.
Remember all your old phone numbers.
Remember your newborn child looking into your eyes.
Remember the smell of Crayolas.
Remember when everything was new. Remember when everything was new.
Remember when everything was new.
That was Remember. The voices you heard were Duncan Sylvester, Aaron McMahon, Kim Tripsmith, Randy Ellis, Jacqueline Hayward, Elaine Holtz, Dave Berry, Eli Bishop, Sarah Savitz, Bob Engel, Ken Norton, and Elizabeth Fuller of the Hitchhikers Ensemble.
Next week, two generations of trying to make things work. A civil rights activist tells of her first trip to jail, her years in Africa, and her coming home. And a young Mexican-American poet-activist journeys from past to future.
And remember, we're doing a November special with the stories of war veterans. If you're a vet and you've got stories, our email is info@independenteye.org.
Hitchhiking Off the Map is produced by the Independent Eye with funding from the National Endowment for the Arts and from the Hitchhikers Guild. Visit our website, www.independenteye.org. This is Elizabeth Fuller.
And Conrad Bishop. And some quotes. Stephen Wright. Everywhere is walking distance if you have the time.
Emily Dickinson wrote, "To live is so startling, it leaves little time for anything else."
From the wisdom of Calvin and Hobbes, "It's a magical world, Hobbes, old buddy. Let's go exploring."
And from Meister Eckhart, "If the only prayer you said in your whole life was, 'Thank you,' that would suffice."